Hey, this is Nathan Lee Jones, and you're listening to Out Radio.
Spend the weekend inside, spend it all in myself. Cause I couldn't afford spending anything else. I copped another parking. Bills to survive. Giving up on the car, too expensive to drive. Some stranger stopped me on the train and asked if I could spare some change. Harder for cash and trying hardest to keep what I'm losing in tax. Cause after this financial year, the bulk of that will disappear.
Welcome to Out Radio. This is J.D. Doyle, and that was an artist from Sydney, Australia, and the song Broke from his latest album, Sooner or Later. He's Nathan Lee Jones, and he's released three albums, including a brand new one called Brand New Christmas, premiering this month. And I've got a special interview all about that one, but you'll be able to hear that on my other show, Queer Music Heritage, because that's traditionally where I do my shows of holiday music. When I contacted him to interview about the Christmas CD, I couldn't resist doing the interview in two parts, one for that project, and another, this one, to talk about his career in general. Also, as you hear near the end of the segment, it will turn into kind of a coming-out interview, and I'm very pleased to share that story. But let's start at the beginning. Nathan, welcome to Out Radio.
It is good to be out. Thank you, JD. How are you?
I'm doing good. How did you get your start in music?
Ah, well, it was an interesting start, I think. My dad is a minister, or was a minister of a church at the time, and we lived next door in the manse, I believe is the technical word, next door to the church, and so I was lucky enough to be able to wander in at my leisure and play the piano and play the drums and play the organ and have that space and that room to sing at the top of my lungs and to create music, really.
How old were you then?
I think I began piano lessons at about 5 or 6 years old. So ever since then, it's been, part of my life. But it's funny. My older brother and sister, were both learning piano from one old lady, Mrs. Rose. Rest in peace, Mrs. Rose. I don't think she's with us anymore, but she, I think, had a bit of a deal, like almost like a buy two, get one free deal. So my brother and sister went along and I tagged along as the freebie, but weirdly enough, I was the one that kind of kept running with it. So, yeah.
Well, I understand your first demo really jump-started your career and won you a national music competition.
Yeah, that was really unexpected, actually. It was when I was planning to relocate to Sydney anyway from my hometown of Adelaide, and feeling inspired and packing my suitcases and getting ready, I did slip a demo recorded into this competition, and to kind of arrive in Sydney and within a month or two have a national award and a whole really a development deal with Sony and a music video and all this industry opening for me was quite surprising and pretty amazing. So yeah, it was a beautifully timed event and definitely got me started on this crazy little music journey.
Was that demo a song that's showed up on a later release?
Yeah, it was actually. It was the song Day After Day, which was featured on my album 10 Letters. And that song, funnily enough, actually became the single that we did a music video for as well. So it was a very special song in that time of my life.
Talk about the song, and I've seen the video. Your hair was quite a bit longer then. Kind of like Sir Lancelot.
On my digital to-do list, I need to go into YouTube and delete that video. That's on my to-do list. I should honor
it's
the
history.
Heritage,
it's history.
Honestly, it's that video. I mean, we had a blast doing it. Well, first of all, the upload quality of that video is horrible because it's quite a long time ago now. And it was a video that was a lot of fun to do, but probably, yeah, it was a little rushed in the procedure. But we did. The funny thing about that video, though, was we had a helicopter through some kind of sponsorship arrangement. So we did get some great aerial shots and had a grand piano in the middle of nowhere, and it was a lot of fun to make. But
a beautiful setting.
Yeah, definitely. So look, maybe I'll find the original and upload an HD version at some point.
Well, talk about the song itself.
That song was written as part of a concept album. 10 Letters, I really wanted to do an album which experienced a story that threads these 10 songs together. So it's actually a series of letters between two people writing back and forth, and I played with that concept for a bit. So it's quite subtle, though. It's something that really inspired me to get out of my own, coming from quite a religious background, getting out of that mindset of writing songs that are more so about how you want to feel. This album gave me a chance to almost role play in a sense, but also get a lot of lyrics out of myself that I otherwise wouldn't usually write. So Day After Day was definitely quite a dramatic turn for me, a song about such intense love lost and all these really quite adult things for me at the time when I was in my, you know, barely 20, in my early 20s. So yeah, that was definitely a great experience. It got me on the path to writing, I guess, the kind of material that I'm writing today.
And let's hear the song, Day After Day.
What am I to say that won't evoke the pain that never seems to go away? Words are hard to find when nothing comes to mind but echoes of an empty promise, like I'll always love you or I'll never leave you. History goes to show your absence only grows with every letter that I send. Seconds pass away as hours turn to days. I know I've heard it said before, to let bygones be bygones. I'm not letting go. No, 'cause day after day, time after time, I find myself watching the window, knowing that year after year, the flowers will fade away, but the longing for you just gets stronger. Nights are getting cold and days are wearing on with nothing but the thoughts of you. Photos on the wall remind me of them all, so coping isn't all that easy. Yeah, I'll always love you and I'll never leave this to be. No. Day after day, time after time, year after year, the flowers will fade
I'm all to say the won't evoke the pain that never seems to go away. After day, and time after time, I find myself watching the wind and just knowing that year after year, the flowers will fade away, but the longing for you just gets stronger, stronger, stronger. Tell me, what am I to say to one of the pain that never seems to go away? Day after day, where's the heart find another person for the echoes of an empty day after day?
Also from the Ten Letters album is The Way I'm Missing You, and that was released as a single. Tell us about that song.
Yeah, that song was the first track from Ten Letters, and also the last track that I actually wrote before recording it. And yeah, definitely when the album was released, it most summed up musically where I was at. Yeah, there was a couple of complications in the release with all things, as every artist that's ever been involved with any kind of a label or third party. So in the end, I was able to release that independently. And before I actually moved to New York, I re-released that album and that single. Yeah, it's again another one of those songs that at the time I was writing and putting my heart into, I guess, imagining what it would feel like to be a person like that. Funnily enough, though, since then, I do look back on that song in particular. And things like that have actually happened to me in real life, not just to me, and also to my friends and people that are close to me. And as what happens when you do get older, life does get complicated. And I look back on a song like that and think, wow, it's almost prophetic as to how adult relationships and some things in the big scary world as an adult do go down. So, an interesting song.
Again, we were talking about the song "The Way I'm Missing You."
Day, but you vanished overnight. Oh, oh. It's not about the keys you took to drive away my car. It's not about the things you purchased on my credit card. But it's all about the way. This note, well, it only took one guess. Searched the phone before their name, stumbled on your new address. But I'm not trying to track you down or drag you back with me. When I say, that it's not about the keys you took to drive away my car. It's
not about the things you purchased on my credit card, but it's all about the way I'm missing you. So come back missing you, 'cause I am missing you. Come back missing you, just
so you mentioned you were, as a writer, kind of almost role-playing. Were these songs your stories?
Yeah, look, they were stories. They were exaggerated stories, really, because I think we all, even as young as we can remember, we do experience emotions. We're still human. So I think when writing these songs, I did play that up and kind of give that big epic kind of sound, and lyrically exaggerated, I guess, the vibe of those songs. But yeah, as I say, it's funny now. It doesn't seem too exaggerated at all. It seems like things that actually do happen when you do have, yeah, complications in a romantic sense.
So what year was the album 10 Letters?
10 Letters was back in 2006, but actually had finished the writing for that album around 2004 or 2005. And I think started the project itself about 2001. So it really is going back quite a way.
Okay, well, then talk about your musical growth from the 10 Letters album up through the 2011 CD, Sooner or Later.
Yeah, well, a huge change in that for me. I mean, I think people maybe listen to the two albums between 10 Letters and Sooner or Later and obviously just see that as another album and same kind of sound, same voice. But for me, it's almost night and day, because for me, Sooner or Later was a project, even though it didn't have such a concept as 10 Letters does about the thread of songs and the letters and all that kind of stuff. For me, Sooner or Later is a very personal concept album, because it's the first album I've ever written and the first 11 songs I've ever written, that every single word comes from a truthful place. And for me, that was such a cathartic experience to actually, especially coming from quite a religious family and being in that mindset where you write how you think people should hear you write, and you write what you think people want to hear. I actually wrote an album from start to finish that was what I want to say and what I really, really think. So Sooner or Later for me is such a personal album, and almost quite indulgent in a sense. I mean, I spent so much time and so much money and so much energy in instruments and anything I could possibly imagine, put a choir on there, put a brass band on there, put an orchestra on there, and really just created, I guess, the album I've always wanted to make. So for me, releasing that and putting that out there was a really, really personal step in my journey.
Well, that album has a standout song called Beautiful You, and I understand it's been used in weddings and civil union ceremonies. Tell us about the song and how it feels to get that acceptance for one of your songs.
Yeah, it's been amazing with that song, because it was such a simple song, and I always thought it was too simple when I was writing it. But it's funny that people do connect with a simple sentiment such as that. But yeah, look, to have it used in occasions where people are expressing their love in such a public way is absolutely, absolutely flattering, and makes me, yeah, almost validates the time and energy that goes into making a song and an album, because you can't really get much more special than that, a song speaking for someone's love for someone else. So yeah, very, very blown away by that, and even now still I'm getting emails every now and then of people saying they're using it as their daddy-daughter dance, or a song to, you know, a song they kind of use to commemorate their special day or their anniversary. So yeah, it definitely does give me a lot of pride in that, for sure.
And again, the song is called Beautiful You.
I owe you a song, the song you deserve, a beautiful melody.
with beautiful words. Life becomes beautiful. Complicate life. It complicates me. But you give me oxygen, yeah. And teach me to breathe. And life becomes song that song you deserve. You mean more than melodies, yeah. You mean more than words. 'Cause life becomes beautiful.
You had a single a while back, and quite a lively one, called Lip Sync, and it's not mentioned on your website, which I found interesting.
Yeah, look, that is interesting. For me, I love that song. I wrote that and got that all produced when I first moved to New York. So, again, great memories and very special. For me, the only reason it's probably not mentioned is because there was definitely a thread of style between 10 letters and Sooner or Later, and Lip Sync was my little experiment in between. I think it just confused people, to be honest, and it confused iTunes because it was a very, very pop song.
It's quite different, yes.
It is, yeah. And yeah, I guess my vibe is that more earthy piano vocal style. I guess I thought, ooh, I should probably maybe keep my music style a little similar just for now, but you know what? I do want to get back to that at some point, and I really, I may even use that song again and re-record, but I really do want to do a pop album at some stage.
So
it's really pop.
So Lip Sync was kind of Ben folded over backward?
I so wish I used that at the time. JD, why didn't I know you then?
And here's the song, Lip Sync.
Calling all actresses on the weekdaily soaps. Calling all wannabes on reality shows. Calling all cameos on the Hollywood scene. Sing along, sing along. 'Cause you got the looks, you got the vibe. You got the clothes, you got the style. You got the voice to have a hit. If you lip sync, lip sync. Yeah.
superstars and your siblings as well. Call it all heiresses with your chain of hotels. Call it all cover boys from the teen magazines. Sing along, sing along. Yeah, cause you got the look, you got the vibe. You got the clothes, you got the style. You got the voice to have a hit. If you lip sync, lip sync. So get on your feet and find your groove. Get on the stage and move your moves. Get on the charts at number one as you lip sync, lip sync. You're a song.
How did you get connected with David Raleigh?
David and I met through a bizarre chain of events. And I think any time you do meet someone that you can't really imagine your life without, it's always hard to trace back those steps and realize how it is that you kind of came across them. But I was really just ready for an adventure with New York. And I jumped essentially off, you know, the edge of a metaphorical cliff and had no one to catch me. And I was actually going through a website, which was couchsurfing.com. I was a little bit more adventurous back then and had no qualms with meeting up with strangers and crashing on their couch if it meant seeing more of the world. So, yep, through a friend there, he actually went to a church, of all things, MCC, and I found that absolutely eye-opening and a fantastic experience, and met a guy, David Raleigh, who was then playing the piano at this church. And we hung out from there, and he showed me a bit of New York and showed me some of his songs, loved his music. He needed a producer for one of his songs, so I produced one of his songs, and that led to producing his first album, which led to going on tour with him, which led to working on his next album, and it's been a great musical relationship since. And yeah, we're both different enough and yet similar enough to have a really great musical connection.
Well, people may be wondering, who's David Raleigh? Why are you talking about him? Well, he's an accomplished artist. He's an excellent singer. I've played him on my show before. His last album was Beginning Again. Nathan produced that one, and you're producing the next album. And what's it going to be called?
We haven't got a name just yet, but we've actually recorded the bulk of it. So we're just in the stage now where we're getting it edited up and sorting out the technical bits and pieces behind it. But it's a great album. He's got great songs for this one. We wrote them all together, actually. And
well, I don't do this for very many artists because I just can't afford it, but I pre-ordered his album last July.
Wonderful.
In 2011, you two spearheaded an inspiring project, a remake of That's What Friends Are For, with you're the producer. Tell us about the stellar talent you rounded up and how did you get them all together?
Well, first of all, David Raleigh is a very convincing person, and no one can really say no to him. So luckily he's got some great friends that he asked, and they said yes. One of them being Ari Gold, who I believe is Sir Ari Gold now, who is yeah, great little pop star.
I've interviewed him several times.
Yeah, I'm sure. He's the face of gay pop in a lot of ways. He's fantastic. So, and also Alan Cumming, who is obviously fantastic actor and singer, and yeah, he is friends with David as well, and a great draw card now, especially in light of this year's events. Billy Porter, who won Best Actor at the Tonys recently, yeah, said yes as well, and all those guys were amazing. For me to walk in there and produce that, and to have someone like Billy singing his head off and nailing it in one take is just amazing. Really cool experience. So producing that and getting that together was, yeah, a real thrill.
And produced by Nathan Lee Jones, here's David Raleigh, Ari Gold, Alan Cumming, and Billy Porter singing That's What Friends Are For.
And as far as I'm concerned, I'm glad I got the chance to say that I do believe I love you. And if I should ever go away, well then close your eyes and try to feel the way we do today. And then if you can remember, keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me, for sure. That's what friends are for, in good times and bad times, I'll be on your side forevermore. That's what friends are for. Close your eyes, I know these words are coming from my heart. And then if you can remember, oh, keep smiling, keep shining, knowing you can always count on me,
on me, for sure.
Honey, for sure. That's what friends are for. That's what friends are for.
Well, from searching you on the internet, it seems like New York City is your second home. So how is it to work out of two continents?
I think for me, it's exactly what I need. I get a little bit restless sometimes, and yeah, I do love a new scenery and a new point of view. So for me, I think Sydney and New York, they just go hand in hand. Especially like New York is such a buzz and so exciting. There's so much stuff going on, and I definitely need that every few months, really, that vibe. So Sydney is also a great place to round that off. I mean, I love just hanging at the beach here and the lifestyle, even though I am busy with projects. It's a little less cutthroat and a little more relaxing and zen. So it's great to have both, and I love traveling. So it works out well for me.
In an interview I found online that someone did in 2012, you said you tend to write your music in your darkest moments.
Yeah, I do. Look, I think I think previously that's definitely the case. It's funny hearing quotes back that you said in another life almost, because I think that does link to where I was at the time. Music's always been that outlet, or I can kind of like, it's the only place where I can kind of be honest with myself, be honest with, you know, the moment and write what I feel. Look, I think that's changed with just this recent actual Christmas album that I've done. I decided to do an album that's happy, and that's great, and I think that's really enlightened me musically. It's kind of given a lot of joy to me and my writing and my music. Just 'cause Christmas is happy.
I think the difference is, for the Christmas one, you were focused on a project, and when you're dealing with issues, you need to get them out. When you're happy as a clam, music, I don't want to write a song.
Exactly. I was going to go to the beach.
Right.
Yeah, you're probably right there, I think, yeah. So, yeah, and that's not such a bad thing that you can write songs in those dark places. And to be honest, I still do if I'm going through a stage where my heart's been broken. Even now, I still do definitely go to the piano and get it out in a song. But yeah, I think music helps in that way, and I've always said that I think music, for every dollar I've lost on creating albums and putting music out there, I think I've saved it in therapy. You know, if I had a therapist all these years, it probably would have tallied up to the same amount. So music is my therapist, and I'm so thankful that I have it.
What song do you use the most for the finale of your shows?
I think, funnily enough, the first track of my last album, which is Who the Hell I Am, I usually like to end off with that because, first of all, it has a key change. And JD, a key change is wonderful for a last track. It adds finality. But also, I think it's quite an empowering song, and I love people to leave shows that I play feeling like, you know, they've had an insight into themselves, and they've had that little bit of an escape, and they feel a little bit stronger in themselves and their outlook on what they're returning to when they leave the venue or the place I'm performing. So that song for me has that strength to it that I love to leave people with.
When you hear me say that something is about to change, then it will. Yes, it will. When you hear me say that life will bring me better days, then it will. Yes, it will. Who are you to say that I could never climb the highest mountain? Who are you to say that I could never swim the deepest ocean? Shut me down again. No, it won't. No, it won't. And nothing you can say will hold me like a ball and chain. Said it won't. No, so it won't. Yeah.
which song live gets the most audience reaction?
It does change from show to show, but I think a song like Bubble Wrap actually is one that people, you can kind of sometimes see their eyes light up because it's just got that little catchy da 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 da, and people, I think, like a hook. So, it does usually seem with that song that by the time you reintroduce that hook after the second chorus, people are singing along and people are getting into it. So that song always does surprise me that people pick up on it so quickly. I guess it has that catchy nature to it.
Was it just a joke or did you mean the words you said? Lately every undertone has held a bitter edge. We could laugh it over, but I've had enough and I'm about to break, about to break. Give yourself an ego boost and try to shoot me down. Either I can bite my tongue or serve it back around. Well, I don't like the options, 'cause I've had enough and I'm about to break. So, bubble wrap my mind, bubble wrap my heart, bubble wrap my dreams before you shatter them apart. Handle me with care by holding me upright and marking me as fragile on the baggage of my life. Just an empty rhyme. Words may never hurt me, but they'll kill me over time. Well, I can hide the bruises, but I've had enough and I'm about to break. So, bubble wrap my mind, bubble wrap my heart, bubble wrap my dreams before you shatter them apart. Handle me with care by holding me.
And from the 2011 album, Sooner or Later, that was Bubble Wrap. I want to talk about your coming out. And yeah. I've been aware of you for a while, and I have a clear memory of playing the Christmas song you and David Raleigh did on my December.
Yeah.
I played it on my December 2010 show, and at the time...
You did?
I did.
Wow.
Yeah, well...
That's awesome.
At the time, I tried to determine if you were gay, and I'll pause for my listeners and state that if any new listeners, my policy is I only play openly LGBT artists, and Google didn't help me out back in 2010, but as David was openly gay, the song qualified. Moving on, in 2011, you released a new album called Sooner or Later, and on it is the song Crying Out for Love. And that's been called a marriage equality song. It has some important lyrics, and would you give the verse that starts with every man and every woman?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the lyrics for that are every man and every woman, black or white or any shade between, straight or gay, it doesn't matter, any faith we do or don't believe. The one thing that we can't deny is everybody's crying out for love. For me, that was coming from a Christian family and as you say, coming out and having that whole experience, it was a real eye-opening moment for me writing that song, and definitely almost spoke of where I was at as far as like a philosophical, almost religious in a sense point of view. Like that was my belief. That was who I was, that everybody is in the same boat. And if we all just show that love to each other, and if we all just show undiscriminatory love to each other, then the world will be a more positive place. So that was a huge step for me in the process. But, yeah, particularly putting that song out there and having even like, funnily enough, coming from such a conservative Christian background, even having the word gay on an album, for me when I was releasing it, was a pretty big step because, yeah, I used to sing about Jesus. And for a lot of people, those two concepts aren't compatible, which is really sad.
Okay, well, I'm going to be picky. Singing a song about same-sex marriage is not saying you're gay. So in July, you got the new video, and I found a couple articles on Australian websites that, you're out of the closet.
I'm out. Yeah, look, it was a really interesting time, and it's been a huge year in that way, because what happened with the video and the release was that I was out with friends and family by that point too, and I actually just thought after, weirdly enough, we filmed the video over two weekends, between one of the weekends where we'd started filming and the next weekend where we actually filmed the rally and all those parts of the video. Within that week, I went and had breakfast at a cafe, bought my laptop, and actually just like started writing an open letter, I guess, as to what I would want people to feel about me and what I would want them to feel when they watch the video. And I think coming from an honest place was probably a better position to take rather than being coy about, you know, am I or aren't I or whatever. So I actually just wrote that just more so as a letter for me to get my head in the right space. But as soon as I finished it, I thought, everyone should hear this. I mean, what's the point in kind of not writing this? I mean, what's my fear? Is it because, you know, I'll be less popular, less marketable, people will like the song? Like, what are my reasons? And so I just, actually in this letter, I had the lyrics to the song Sooner or Later, and I thought, oh, you know what, I'll put the song on and make a video and just put it on my Facebook page. And yeah, it was a little digital coming out to everybody else. So from that point on, online magazines and articles were able to take that information and use that when promoting the video for Crying Out for Love.
Well, on a personal level, yes, the song is terrific and the video is terrific, but it must have felt personally that you just jumped over a mountain.
Yeah, it did in a lot of ways. And, it's funny and terrible in a sense that it has to feel like that. And I think in years to come, we'll look back and realize just how crazy it was that you do feel like you have to keep part of your secret for so long. But yeah, it is a bizarre feeling, and almost psychologically it's tricky, because even though you do put this out there and you do something as bold as posting it on your Facebook and putting a song out there and all this kind of stuff, it still does come down to the point sometimes where someone tries to talk to you about it and you're still falling back on those triggers of like, oh, you know, it's not really something I want to talk about right now, whatever. It's bizarre. I'm still obviously going through those motions and learning to be stronger myself and being happy with myself. But look, I think about where I did come from, and I think about where I am now, and life is just so amazing. Life is better. Life is great. And I think being honest with yourself and being honest with people you love and even being honest with the wider public and community is something that, even though it's hard at first, there's no substitute for it. And I'm so happy that this year has gone the way it has.
I think you just answered my next question. I was going to ask, it's been a few months now, but it seems like you're viewing that video as part of your journey.
Yeah, I am. I am. I mean, I did reach a point, I think, recently where I was at a crossroad of, do I use my music just for commercial reasons and, you know, try to achieve a career in that way? Or do I kind of tie it in with my own personal life and do what I love? And, yeah, that was essentially the choice I made. And, yeah, thought it was best to run with tying it into my day-to-day emotions and what I'm going through as a person.
What's your next step in coming out?
Oh, my next step in coming out. Look, I've got another album actually on the way, which is bizarre because I'm still releasing one at the moment, but I'm just kind of firing up the ammunition. And I have another song that I've actually written that I'm really, really excited about that I really do hope. Crying Out for Love was, as you said before, very, very coy in what it is, but I hope this next one is going to be a bit of an anthem for the LGBT community. So I have new ideas, and hopefully that's going to be coming up pretty soon too.
Oh, I can't wait. I got to confide, when I was writing down my questions, at least once I wrote down the song title as Coming Out for Love.
That's probably not a bad summary of it all. Maybe I'll use that as well. Is it too late to change the title on iTunes?
I think so. This is J.D. Doyle, and I'm going to wrap up this, as you can tell, very fun interview with Nathan Lee Jones. And I'm going to ask Nathan to intro the song, Crying Out for Love.
Well, this is a song that ripped my heart out, put it back in, put me through the ringer of all kinds of emotions. But at the end of the day, I can stand up as a person and say that I am indeed crying out for love.
Love, love. Searching high above.
Any question I should have asked you I didn't ask you?
JD, I think you have been amazingly thorough, and I just, yeah, appreciate that you've done your research. It's a beautiful thing. I don't think there's anything else you could have asked. It's wonderful.
Well, I usually joke that my fallback questions are boxers or briefs, top or bottom, cut or uncut.
And we didn't even need to go there.
We didn't need to. Oh, no.
Maybe next time. Maybe we've got nothing else to talk about.
Right.